Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers, and we have an emergency session of stock therapy. How are you doing, Emmett?
Oh, it could be better. I mean, it's been a rough few days here since that Fed meeting. I mean, such a fake out that first day when the market rallied, and then since then it's been a severe pullback. So it's totally faked us out, and I'm sure a lot of people have been caught up in this, and it's a tough week here.
Yeah. How about you? Yeah. I'm doing well. I'm at the Grand Canyon right now. I'm actually recording in the car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, this is a little bit abnormal. I'm kind of testing this out. I'm going to be doing a lot of RV traveling over the next 4 or 5 months. So, if this could work, this would be great. Doing interviews anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
I travel. So
Starlink and stuff. I saw you're bringing Starlink and
stuff. Yeah. It's like I got Starlink set up. I have Verizon. In the Grand Canyon right now, it's a little bit more stable. My Starlink has some obstructions right now with trees and stuff, so I'm using my iPhone actually to tether.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I wanted to chat with you. There's a ton of stuff going on. I guess first, the markets. I mean, the markets are unraveling. It's just like when people thought things couldn't get worse, it just got worse, you know? And things are just falling apart. It seems like, I mean, what's your take? I mean, I know before our last talk, you said you didn't have much cash available, but I mean, are you seeing some great buys? Like, what are you doing? Are you finding some way to, you know, to trade this?
Well, I mean, I thought the fire sale on Tesla was a week or so ago after Elon sold some shares, and here we are, another 10% lower than even that. And it's hard to have cash handy, you know, but for those that do, you know, you just don't know where the bottom is. Do you want to, is this a falling knife? Can you catch it? You know, is this the right time to catch it? And I mean, you know, I don't know. It's almost like the opposite of the exuberance, I feel like, that there was, you know, 18 months ago in the market, you know, when nothing could go down, everything was going up, every story stock, every story SPAC, everything was just flying through the roof. There'd be an earnings report, the stock would be up 30% on the earnings, you know, whether it was Upstart or whatever, you know, Upstart today had earnings, it was down 50%, Netflix was down like 40% on its earnings. So it's like, now it's the opposite. Now, like, even if the company has good earnings, it doesn't really work. The whole macro market just drags it down, and like, every stock is just capitulating. It just depends on what degree. The tech and growth stocks are capitulating harder or crashing harder, and you know, it's a very trying time, you know. But this is when you can pick up, maybe at some point, if you can catch a falling knife and you catch it near the bottom, then you're going to be very well off. I just don't know where that bottom necessarily is. Maybe it's now, since everyone's like at maximum fear. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think about
it? I mean, it's tough. I mean, I don't know. I think the COVID bottom was probably a little bit easier to catch because the Fed gave this kind of, you know, we'll basically backstop at anything and everything. This time around, it's tough because the Fed is in this position where they're handcuffed, where, you know, they're actually tightening. So they're actually not trying to stop it. They can try to, you know, slow down their tightening, but still they've got this inflation problem. When I look at, I kind of look at it, the bigger picture and the backdrop of, when I look 5 to 10 years out and I look at, you know, what are the companies that are going to be doing the best? And I can't help but think, like, you have the Apples and the Amazons and the Googles and, you know, of course, Tesla and others, NVIDIA. These companies are going to do really well over the next 5 or 10 years. You know, it's just they have such network effects and such big platforms. And I kind of feel like, you know, the NASDAQ is made up, you know, actually mostly of a lot of these big tech companies nowadays. And whereas before it was kind of this risky play, the NASDAQ now is like more of a, you get the best of tech, and it's been hammered. I think I was calculating 27% just in the past 6 months, you know? And I can't help but think, like, you know, if you get in at, you know, around these levels, even, I mean, it could go down lower, let's say, who knows, you know, 10% or 20% lower. But I mean, there's going to be some cap to how low it can go, you know?
Yeah, you got to think we're in like at least in the bottom half of the correction. You know, you got to think that we're not, you know, so if we're in the bottom half of the correction, worst case, like whether it's the beginning of the bottom half or the end of the bottom half, then if you've been waiting and you get in now, then it's a good deal. You got to think, right? So yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's hard to time the actual bottom. By the time, you know, the market might rebound severely on the other direction, and you know, you just don't know. Like, and then like it after the Fed meeting, you know, like it went up like 5% intraday, the NASDAQ or so, you know, was down 1%, ended up today 4%. So everyone thought like, oh, we're back on track, you know? And I thought so. I could close my, you know, the short positions our fund had. I closed it like the day before, luckily. And I was like, oh, great. This is looking good. And we did it the right time. And nope, the market came right back down. So it was a big fake out. Yeah. So you just don't know. We're like in the midst of the trees, and it's hard to see the whole forest. Yeah. Picture.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like when I look at like my stock watch list, it just seems like so much of the tech world or these tech companies, especially the growth companies, are down like 70-80%. And there's like actually some decent companies that are, you know, down like crazy amounts. Mm-hmm. I was looking at NVIDIA. I mean, it's a pretty solid company.
NVIDIA too. I mean, I think the hard tech is differentiated, like Tesla and NVIDIA. They're kind of like hard tech, you know, like software as a service, all that stuff. I just feel like that stuff can get disintermediated any time, any place by some new software. But when you have a staple hard tech that has a clear advantage at this time, competitive advantage, it's like sometimes maybe that's much harder to disrupt and disintermediate. So like you said, NVIDIA and Tesla, obviously. I don't know any other. What other names have you been looking at?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of names, but the my problem is I have everything invested in Tesla, basically, and I'm not really dying to pull Tesla and pay taxes. I'm not really dying to take on margin either. You know, it's something I think I've worked to this position where I don't have to take margin. I don't want to take margin. I mean, if things get really bad, I mean, I don't know. I might sell some Tesla to leverage, like to buy calls or something, or, you know, to go to lever up a bit more. But I think I'm pretty happy right now, just kind of observing, sitting out a bit. But there are a ton of names where I kind of like, if I wasn't in Tesla, I'd be like really searching hard for. Like Shopify is down, like, I think it was an all-time 80, high of 17. 80%. Yeah, 1700 now, it's down like 350 or so. Yeah, you've got these like, I mean, you have Roblox down like crazy. Is it down like almost what, 80%?
80% too, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, man, how low can these things go? But I mean, some of these companies actually have, you know, decent revenue and even, cash flows and stuff. So it's, I don't know. I feel like for certain companies, it's getting
like,
super attractive.
Coinbase, right? I mean,
Coinbase is just like
Zoom,
getting thrashed. Like,
Coinbase has like a 6 PE multiple or something currently.
Yeah, it's like no love. And yeah, Zoom is like, what, 92 bucks? It's like it's like a value stock.
It's like a 20-something PE multiple currently. But it's hard to say. I mean, some of these stocks are going to be real winners, but the market doesn't think so at this current time. But maybe if you pick them right, then you could do very well.
Yeah, I just feel like there's gonna be some person or people out there who just like, you know, lever up, you know, with leaps and just go crazy.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people have been doing that the last like 3 months, and they're being killed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but there's gonna be a time
doing it at the bottom, and those people will get lucky.
Yeah. Exactly. It's one of those times. I mean, it's it's interesting. I feel like in some ways, like being so heavy in Tesla, I don't know. I haven't felt the need to really, you know, diversify, and I wasn't really compelled to look see what else is out there deeply. But as the valuations go down, actually, it's like really getting interesting for me. I mean, like, I'm like, wow, it's like I could see some of these be like a 10x, you know, 10xers within 5 to 10 years. A lot of the
companies. I mean, Tesla's pulled back a lot itself, but I think it's only down like 36 or something percent from its all time high, or 40 something percent. But all these other companies, like you said, are down like 80-90%. A lot of them. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. So curious, what's your funds? Do you have any kind of overall strategy? Just kind of, you know,
It's tough. I mean, we touch on it on our Tuesday live streams and such, but you know, we've tried to, you know, we have our four core holdings we talk about, and we kind of rotated out of a lot of the derivatives on them and hold like mostly stock on those positions for our core holdings. And, you know, we do some stuff around longer term options with Tesla and such. And we did, you know, I think we've talked about it publicly, but we had a basket of short positions on that did well for us in the month of April. So the market was down, and I think we were down about the same as the market, but our beta is much higher. So typically when the market's up or down, we're like up or down twice as much, or three, you know, so mm-hmm. we sort of weathered the storm a little bit better than we otherwise would have in April, for example. And we've explored other types of option strategies, like selling premium, just because it seems like there's so much, you know, they're so expensive options overall. If you look at the VIX, it's like in the 30s, like that's normal right now. And it doesn't seem right. You know, it seems like options are so expensive, and you could do well selling, you know, spreads, you know, maybe. So we've been experimenting with a few different things that have done all right. But we still have our four key holdings we talk about, you know, Tesla, obviously our top, we've really doubled down more on Tesla versus the others, but we still like and have some of the others, which is Lemonade, Rocket Lab, and Roblox. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we like those companies long term still, but the market is not being friendly to any of these companies at this time. So it's been a rough start of the year, I would say, for most, yeah. you know, growth manager, you know, growth hedge funds or growth funds. Like, look at ARK Investment; they're having a really
Yeah, I mean, right when you think it can't get worse, you know, just like gets worse.
It's like worse. Crazy. Yeah. It's right, but we have a really cool thing we're doing. I don't know if you've seen on our Good Soil Investment YouTube channel. We are interviewing new people, but we give half our fees back to charity. And so mm-hmm. the people we interview were, you know, when we interview them at the end, we ask them to pick a charity, and then we donate like $5,000 to the charity of their choice and talk about that the last like 10 minutes of our talk. And, you know, it's growing, but we interviewed, actually, our biggest guest was the CEO and founder of Interactive Brokers just this past weekend we released. I don't know if you saw that, but he's one of those guys, to me, like that's like an Elon Musk type figure. He's just like the smartest guy in any room he's in. And everyone, he commands everyone's respect that's in the room. And everyone, you can tell, and everyone's just listening very intently to everything he says.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw that on your Good Soil channel. Like, I downloaded it, and tomorrow I've got a three hour drive out of Grand Canyon. So I'll listen to it for sure. Yeah. Awesome. I'll link to that actually in the video description. Yeah. Thomas Petterfy, founder of Interactive Brokers. Awesome. Crypto, have you seen what's going on with Bitcoin and everything?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Bitcoin has really disappointed me, to be honest. I mean, I still own my Bitcoin that I've always had. I mean, I think there's a small amount of it I gave to some folks who I was investing in their Bitcoin related company. So it's still like in the Bitcoin arena, but the vast majority of my Bitcoin I still own. And I always thought it would be like digital gold, hoping for that, but it just doesn't feel like gold right now. Like, the market's crashing, so is Bitcoin. Like, I thought my gold is supposed to be like a stable source of value, and the market's crashing to some degree. And unfortunately, it's just, you know, it's not there yet. It's not mature yet like that yet. It's been I guess it's just a risk asset, but it doesn't produce anything. It's just speculative, you know, which is a little worrisome to me. I mean, maybe it just takes a lot longer to play out, but there's so many Bitcoin bulls that have, you know, want it to be digital gold, but there's so many others that are like get rich quick type people. And the second it's like not making them more money, they're just quick to sell it. And it just causes a lot of volatility. What are your thoughts on like crypto and Bitcoin and such? What do you
think? I mean, I've had a feeling that this year would not be good, you know, for crypto.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, if the Fed was going to tighten, and if stocks were going to get hit, I felt like crypto would get hit perhaps even harder just because of the sensitivity to risk.
I thought the speculative ones would. I thought like NFTs for sure and all the other crypto coins. But I thought Bitcoin especially, that's like supposed to be like has the most people in. But go on. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Yeah. But I mean, it's tough to value crypto because most of it is just it's like a supply and demand, you know, play where you don't have obviously the whole you know, substantial income to value, you know, crypto off of yet. That's a potential thing in the future, but for now it doesn't. So if you're going off supply and demand, then I think part of it is, you know, if you look at the technical kind of charts and stuff, it's tough because if Bitcoin and Ethereum and all these others don't hold this level, let's say Bitcoin 30,000, Ethereum 2,000 or whatever, and it could really go down another level, you know? Yeah, that could be pretty painful.
Today. Yeah, I mean, just Monday of, you know, it just dropped from like 33,000 to just below 30,000 in like a short period of time. Yeah, it's, and you have all these institutions that have gotten into Bitcoin and they're a lot slower to move, you think, if they're putting part of their balance sheets in Bitcoin. But when they start moving out of Bitcoin, watch out, you know, if they're, if you have the institutional people who put part pieces of their balance sheet into Bitcoin, if they start deciding, oh, let's get out of this, then that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's move on to actually Tesla and Elon Musk. So I wanted to actually talk to you about Elon's tweet yesterday saying that, you know, if he dies, in, I guess, in a mysterious way, then it was nice knowing you all. And I guess it was right after, you know, he tweeted about the head of the Russian Space Agency sending kind of a critical, you know, message to Russian media. But yeah, what's your take? Is this something that is a serious threat? Should Tesla shareholders be concerned? Or do you think, you know, Elon's got it all under control and, you know, we shouldn't overreact?
I think it's a serious threat. I hope he's taking it as a serious threat and not just kind of joking about it. I don't think he is. I think if anything, he's half joking, but I also think he thinks it's a serious threat. It's funny. I have, an investor I know, who's kind of a Russian, expat, but, he's informed me on some of the stuff going on in Russia from time to time when I've asked him, but he wrote me an email out of the blue, you know, and he just said that he's really deeply worried and concerned for Elon's safety at this point, you know, after that, you know, message from, I guess, Rogozin is the guy's name. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but, you know, he says that Russia is known to assassinate people that it views as political opponents or journalists, right? And his concern isn't so much that what's interesting that he wrote that I'm not sure, hopefully Elon knows, is that the private security team, if he has a really good private security team, that might not be good enough. Like he should have this person, and it makes sense to me, he should have like former members of the U.S. Secret Service, FBI, and other U.S. government agencies on his security team that have active connections to the current employees of those agencies, because that's the best chance to defend against, you know, the latest and current Russian assassination technology or threats or whatever. So, you know, a pure private security team, he worries, and I kind of agree when he puts it out there, is not going to be as effective as a security team that has, you know, experience with the Secret Service and active connections and such. That makes sense to me. So I'm worried. I mean, I asked the gentleman to put a probability on it because I like to think in probabilities. Yeah. And he thinks it's 30% chance that in the next couple of years that there's going to be an assassination attempt on Elon. I thought it would maybe in my head like 10 to 30%. So he's, aggressive. I mean, what do you think? How worried are you about it?
Yeah. So I've had a night to sleep on it. And I keep on thinking like most people don't know how Elon handles security, right? Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't talk about it and he probably shouldn't talk about it. But I've heard through several people throughout the years. So Elon has substantially upped his security over the years and how he approaches things as well. And I've heard just the past few years, like he's really, really cautious with security. Mm-hmm. And he does a lot of things that are very advanced to take his security very seriously. And, and they're just like different people I've met who've like met Elon or who've done different things and seen his security around him. And he will do stuff like, I wouldn't say come unannounced, but he'll send like people ahead of time, mm-hmm. scope out places. He does a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. and his team is very, very paranoid. So his team is not going to send him to a place that's not scoped out, that's not secure. Like that's like, and this is already in the past few years. Like he's really upped his game.
Yeah.
So with the Twitter acquisition, with Starlink, with Ukraine, Russia, all this other stuff, he's going to up his game even more, you know? And so the way I look at it is he was already super paranoid and cautious. He already had probably some of the best people. They're doing like the highest precaution possible, you know, in terms of scoping out everywhere he goes beforehand and everything. And so when I pair it with that, meaning when I hear, and it's from multiple people from like, you know, not the same person. And when I hear that, then I'm thinking, oh, it's like, it's really hard for Russia to get to Elon.
I don't think they would succeed, but 30% chance that there's an assassination attempt or something. I don't know. I mean, you think that's too high?
I think it's way too high. I mean, that's the thing. If someone's net worth is like 50 million or 100 million, and they don't want to spend more than a couple hundred thousand on security a year,
See how the recent oligarchs in Russia, several of them were recently, and their families like assassinated in like Spain and other places. And these are like billionaires, but I guess they've always been in cahoots with Russia. There's some ties there, and there's probably spies within their own security team that work for Russia state security or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm just thinking that Elon is probably spending millions already every year on security. He's not a direct threat to Russia in any way. I mean, he's not trying to take down Russia or whatever. I mean, there could be other just kind of crazy political people who are on the extremes and they see Elon as kind of a threat. But again, he's got this huge, just, you know, security protocol apparatus that I think he knows what he's doing. And the reply to his mother, you know, to May Musk, Elon's like, don't worry, you know, like I forget the exact words, but he's basically says I'll do my best, you know, to be around. I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I mean, I don't want to discount the possibility completely because there's a reason why he has the security that he does. You know, because there is real threats. I'm not really worried at all, actually, in terms of an assassination attempt myself.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm just paranoid, I guess, but Russia is they're kind of backed into a corner in a lot of ways and in this kind of conflict, and I don't know what they'll do, but it's you know, hopefully, like you said, also there's other crazies out there that could do something, not just the Russian state government, but like, you know, when he goes and speaks in front of these crowds of people at Giga Texas event, you know, we were there and there's probably like 1,000 people in front of that stage, you know, how do you know all of them don't have some kind of like poison dart they'll blow at him or something? I don't know.
That's
whatever
true.
It is, like there could be some crazies out there in the world, whether it's Russia, you know, so I hope they're really hunkering down the security on them going forward more so than they have in the past. That's all I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the obvious risks are with Twitter, Elon gets more involved politically just because he has to make the final call on what gets censored, what doesn't get censored. And there's no easy way around it. I think, yeah, it's a tough, tough situation. It's going to help that Twitter is a private company. Elon's getting right smack into the heated debates of politics, elections. You know, imagine if, you know, the election imagine if Twitter is somehow a deciding factor in the next election and certain decisions that Elon made a big impact. Yeah. I mean, it could just get really, really dramatic and messy, I think.
I think they, you know, it's funny, and we referenced it earlier, discussion with Mr. Petterfee, I asked him about it, but and he said that he thinks Elon has to automate it in the algorithm of just censoring things. And I think that's sort of what Elon's alluded to. And that seems to make sense. Like, create the algorithm that censors it and then open source that algorithm so everyone can see it. Yeah. People can criticize it. Maybe you make adjustments to the algorithm over time. But because it's kind of an algorithm, maybe you don't have the far left or the far right complainers complaining as much about it because it's sort of harder to understand because it's like a computer algorithm versus like, you know, defining what, you know, there'll be lots of like if this, then that rules within it, you know, probably. So maybe they can get it to work without too much, you know, craziness by the far left or the far right, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I think, one of the things I'm bullish on Twitter and Elon is because on a typical forum, let's say like Reddit, it's too, I don't want to say democratic, but equal in terms of who has the say on a thread. Like whoever just, you know, posts the most and is the loudest gets the most influence. And it's really hard to moderate that, you know. What do you tell them? Stop posting, you know? It's like, don't post enough. But on Twitter, you've got people following individuals. And I think there's a lot of moderation that can happen by letting the people who post the tweets moderate the replies in their tweet thread. You know, like, for example, like, call out, say stuff that's, you know, or click on things that shouldn't be there or spam.
Maybe you have your censorship algorithm you can pick for everyone that's replying to you.
Exactly. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, there's something that's very, very different with a Twitter model than, let's say, a typical forum model. And that's where I think that Elon probably, I think, more likely than not can figure it out, you know, and can make it happen.
Like maybe you can say, I don't want any anonymous handles to be able to reply to this. Exactly. I don't want anyone that's not verified as a human to, you know, there'll be different levels of human verification, you know, anonymous human verification, but non-anonymous human verification, you know, like me and you have non-anonymous handles, but there's lots of people that do. And so you can say, I don't want these types of, so everyone could have their own kind of algo they customize for their own kind of Twitter sphere, maybe.
Yeah, it's something that I think Reddit can't do, you know. It's just by nature. But Twitter will be able to do. So Elon Musk, do you think he'll become CEO of Twitter for the time being?
I think so. I mean, there's this recent news about the Hindenburg short report saying that Elon might, like, given the market, you know, he might pull out and Twitter would fall to like the teens, and I don't doubt that it could fall drastically, you know, and then he could renegotiate a deal at half the price or whatever. So that's theoretically possible, but I just don't know if he would do that. It would be a little risky, especially, it's theoretically possible. It just seems like, what if he tries to pull out and do that, and then the market rips back up coincidentally at the wrong time, and then it might look bad. I don't know. It could just be seen as market manipulation. You know, there's lots of scrutiny it would be under if he did something like that. So I think he'll just stick with the plan, and that's my guess. But you never know. He might be trying to negotiate for a lower valuation for them to agree to right now, and maybe they will or maybe they won't.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. He replied to that Hindenburg report and saying it's interesting. But he said something about looking to the bright side of life or something.
I think he was saying that because, like, the Hindenburg, they're like known to always short things. Yeah. Things. That's like dark way of investing versus the brighter way of going long on things that, believe it.
Yeah. I think ultimately, the takeaway I got from his reply, Elon's reply, is like, I think there is something about investing where, like, to be optimistic wins out in the end eventually. Like, if you're betting on the right thing, obviously. But if you're too pessimistic, you know, over the long term, you probably are going to miss out on opportunities. And just the fundamental, like, force of the economy and the world economy to grow. You know, I mean, I think that's what can get lost in kind of the market type of noise. Is, you know, you have all the stats, it's crashing, it's going down, how low can it go? You know, we're in a forever bear market now, whatever. But the reality is there's a powerful force of the economy and market forces and trade that has proven over history, over thousands and thousands of years, to be this almost unstoppable force, unless the government just messes up, you know, like tries to take control of it. But if they let the market forces do what they need to do, it's a huge growth engine. And you can't bet against that. You know, you've got to be long on growth or long on the economy overall, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, one of the fundamental things not to forget in, I think, kind of bear markets or big corrections like now.
Yeah, yeah. And how about his tweet with, I guess he responded to Kathy Wood or something about passive mm-hmm. versus active investing.
Yeah.
That was interesting. I mean, he's, you know, diving into like, you know, the theory of active versus passive investing, and he's got a view on that. And it was a little over my head. I feel like I would love him to like expound upon that and explain yeah. more what he means about like amplifying the signal for active. I forget exactly the term he used, but it was a little too much for me to really fully understand what he was saying, but he definitely has a clear idea there. I'm curious if he would ever expound upon it more.
I think his main point, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was in that tweet thread, but he's mentioned like, yeah, when you have the passive funds basically become such a dominant force in buying yeah. like all the stock of, you know, all these companies, then they become the predominant kind of voting power, when they don't really, like, they're not really active investors. They just, you have the Fidelities and, you know,
yeah.
Vanguards and whatever. They control so much of, you know, the shares of these companies. And so it's kind of like an imbalance in the markets. And I don't know how to correct that. I mean, yeah, it just seems like there's so much money that is put into the markets and will be put into the markets, I think, over time. And passive investing just seems like such a great
behemoth
way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was even like, someone was asking me, it was a family member who's older and yeah. has some extra cash that they don't really need.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. I mean, I don't like to give advice, but I was like looking at the risk profile and yeah. they don't really need the money. So it's something that they want some growth out of, but
yeah.
they're older, so they don't want that much risk, but you know, they want something, but again, they don't need the money. So they do want some growth. So I was like, you know, the NASDAQ, if it gets below 12,000, like, you know, this was like a few months ago, I was telling them, I was like, yeah, if it gets below 12,000, the NASDAQ actually is a great basket of tech companies, of large, you know, tech companies that if you, over the next 5 or 10 years, it's hard for me to see that not like outperform, you know, the general overall market. But yeah, I think passive investing, just to stick it into, you know, a basket of great companies, you know, that's like, hard to beat, unless you know what you're doing, or you're yeah. willing to think that you know what you're doing
yeah.
and
try to
be more active.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as there's employment with 401ks and all that, you know, just always going to be more and more money flooding to the indexes. Yeah. It's just going to continue over the long run or medium term to have more money pumped into the indexes, is, you know, that's where the money typically goes for 401ks and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, any other thoughts kind of on the markets, Tesla, Elon, Twitter?
Yeah. I mean, I like that Musk is staying active. I like that he's staying active on Twitter in this kind of tumultuous time of the Twitter takeover and such. I mean, we want to hear his thought process, his thoughts about things. And, you know, it's good that he's staying active on it and not disappearing for days at a time. It's almost like every day, you know, there's more tweets. I mean, I don't know about you, but one of the first things I do when I look at Twitter in the morning or at night or whatever is I search Elon Musk to see mm-hmm. what replies he's done or whatever. And it's always, sometimes there's some interesting things about full self-driving or, you know, I think this next version of full self-driving, I'm excited to see what kind of improvements it has. And hopefully that comes out this week. Have you been using it a lot on your car still?
Yeah. I mean, I was using it actually like a lot, while I was in Austin, and, tracking its improvements. I was actually impressed. but I won't be using it the next few months because I'm towing an IC car because I can't tow my Tesla. So, yeah. But yeah, I was thinking about this idea of actually FSD, and yeah, I was thinking 2024, right, was the kind of planned robotaxi kind of dedicated vehicle production start or ramp. And I think it kind of signals a bit that even though this year and going to next year, FSD will improve to, in Elon's words, they're trying to get it to be as at least as safe as a human driver. But I think it's going to take a while before it can be safe enough for a dedicated robotaxi, right? And mm-hmm. So, yeah, I even think 2024 could be aggressive. You know, if mm-hmm. I'm talking about a robotaxi without a steering wheel or at least
without a driver.
Yeah, without a driver at all, right? A person just goes in. I think it could be rolled out in limited areas, right, in 2024.
You don't think it'll be rolled out in limited areas next year, potentially?
I don't know, possibly, but I just think, yeah, there's a few places like, yeah, I was telling my wife, like, you know, I'm impressed by FSD, but there's like a few times like here and there where it just does a move where I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's like really, really like not the right move. Like,
okay.
Like it's just the wrong move at the right, at the wrong time. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just, you've got to fix those, you know, really catastrophic, you know, things.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to take a while. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah.
Sometimes you think it's the wrong, I mean, I don't have the car. It's probably really nerve wracking yeah. when you see the wrong move happen, you got to stop it.
Yeah.
But you think you reflect on it and sometimes think that like, maybe even though that was very awkward and I stopped it, maybe the car would have stopped itself in time and figured it out anyway, but I just didn't let it
yeah.
go there.
Yeah.
You sometimes wonder that.
So there's this one place in Austin. It's like coming from downtown on this, like, on this road, it's a 2222, and it there's these two roads, and then the lane, there's this like dotted lane where the left lane, it kind of dots into the right lane, but it keeps as a left lane. So it's just two lanes. Okay. It keeps on going, but there's a weird like dotted line that goes into the right lane, but you should just stay in your left lane if you're in the left lane.
Okay.
And so a couple times, like it just like veered right into the right lane, right? When there was a car there, and I was like,
oh, no.
And I pulled it back, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. I'm going, oh, must be, it's just a fluke, right? It's just a fluke. It's just like, you know, second time it happens, right? And I'm
oh
like,
my gosh.
I'm like, wait a minute, this is crazy. And the third time it happened, and it was like, there was a car right there. It wouldn't be good. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, no, they've got to fix a few of these big things.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. I mean, there's a lot of edge cases, a lot of like, you know, things that, it's going to take a while.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But,
yeah, I know Matt, he's had some, he's been doing his full self-driving in the Michigan area where he lives. And
actually,
used to-
Emmett, let me fix your audio. It's crackling a bit. Oh.
So Matt, you know, my partner with Good Soil Investment, like he's been, he has the full self-driving beta and he lives in the Michigan area. And early on, he was like very disappointed. He had lots of problems, always taking over. But in his latest release, he said he's had a lot of like zero intervention drives and he's been like impressed. Like just over time, it's slowly gotten better and better where it's like lulled him into like, now he was woken up and he's like, wow, this is actually really good. I it's slowly just gotten better and better. But he said he talked to, I think, the guy who does Tesla videos, Dirty Tesla or something, mm-hmm. Who does like YouTube videos of his self-driving, who lives somewhere near him. And he's been having some issues with his full self-driving software. So they're going to get together and try to do the same drives that Matt does to see if like the guy Dirty Tesla's cars are also zero intervention for the same drive Matt does. So I'm curious, do many people do that yet? Do many people like take their separate full self-driving cars that are supposed to be exactly the same, but maybe test the same issues with the same car and reproduce it identically with like another car? I'd be so curious.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So the thing is, I mean, if it's the same version, they're going to be identical.
But you
the
would think so.
Yeah,
but I think,
The thing is, it won't appear to be identical because the situations are so complex. Meaning, for example, mm-hmm. you have lighting that's a little bit different, right?
Or different the shadows. Patterns,
yeah, the shadows are different little, like these things like humans were not accustomed to thinking they're very different, but according to the camera, they're completely different situations actually, you know, like in terms of input. And so that's why you could take two cars and they can behave separately, or they could behave very differently. You'd think like they're different, but they're actually running the exact same software. It's just the conditions are slightly, ever so slightly different, which make it a big difference, you know, for the software.
But if there's a spot like you identified that's like almost always an issue, maybe it's consistent enough in that spot with the dotted line changing. I wonder if another car that, you know, like Omar, who's always talking about how he's had zero intervention, although he's like in California, and apparently, you know, the full self-driving, you know, neural networks are kind of overfitted for the Bay Area or whatever. So it's like going to be smoother there. But I'd be curious if other people did the same spot you talked about or say they had the same issue. It's interesting. It's like sometimes I wear like these sleep trackers, like in my I have an Aura ring for my finger or whatever, and I used to wear a Fitbit. I was curious, like, is it really tracking my sleep the right? Maybe I should wear two Aura rings and two Fitbits to see if it's all the same, you know, like stay firm. Theoretically, it should be the same, right? But who knows with technology?
I hear you, man. All right, Em, it's good chatting, catching up with you. Definitely we'll be in touch. I'm actually headed to California this upcoming week, so I'm spending like several weeks back in our old place, so I can probably chat and have some more interviews with you and some other people too. So,
cool. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, we'll do that for sure.
Cool, man. All right. Emmett, take care, and we'll talk later. All right, I'll see you guys. All right.
Bye. Bye.